It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. Fires end zone. It's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
He'll hit immediately.
He got the handoff.
You know and that's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time for the Jets-Chargers pregame report and mailbag. Plus, we will have an opportunity for you to get some good gambling tips and win some money today, courtesy of our friend Walter Cherepinski over at walterfootball.com. Of course, first, we bring in the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at jetsinsider.com. And above all of that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. Chris, what's going on, buddy?
There's a season still going on? Is that still happening? I forget because, you know, the Jets keep losing and there's not much worth talking about, but it's still happening, right?
I just checked. Yes, it's happening.
Yeah, I was scared for a little bit with that silence. I was like, wait, is something actually happening?
The Jets are about to play their 10th game of the season today against the Los Angeles Chargers. But before we get into the game, we should talk about who's not going to be playing. First of all, let's start with the guy who's not here anymore. That, of course, Pierre Desir. He's out, and Brian Poole is done for the season. He may or may not ever play again for the Jets. I guess we'll see what happens in the offseason if the Jets try to re-sign him. But two guys that started the season as starters in that secondary, Desir at outside corner and Poole at slot corner. Poole actually played pretty well, started off a little slow, but then got back to last year's form. Desir, on the other hand, was terrible from the get-go. He did have three interceptions, but he was really bad in coverage. I'm glad that Joe Douglas cut his losses there. If I may spin the old saying here a little bit to fit Desir, he came, he saw, he sucked, he left. And that's pretty much a summary of Pierre Desir's 9 games with the New York Jets. He wasn't going to play much anyway going forward, I don't think, because they had determined he was so bad he wasn't worth putting out there much. So this opens up some opportunities for Bryce Hall. We'll see what they do at the slot corner position. But Brian Poole, a loss. Pierre Desir, addition by subtraction.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of fans were upset about Desir being cut because they wanted to keep him around for the tank. They wanted to keep the tank going strong. Obviously, that wasn't going to be the case. The Jets want to get a look at Bryce Hall. And like you said, no Brian Poole. So I'm going to be interested to see what they do there. That has been something that the Jets defense has actually been able to do pretty well with by having that slot corner and Poole locked up the last couple of years. So that opens up a new way for opposing offenses to attack this defense. You know, it's not like they were exactly hurting for ways to attack them before, but they got a new way now. And then, yeah, obviously, Bless Austin isn't going to be playing this week. So you're essentially going to have the entire starting cornerback group is going to be out this week. And they're going up against Justin Herbert and the Chargers. Herbert struggled a little bit last week against a Dolphins defense that is really, really good. But as bad as the Chargers have been record-wise, because they keep magically finding ways to lose, that this offense has been really good with Justin Herbert. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Jets can do against this team, because on paper right now, you expect the Chargers to put up a lot of points.
We'll get back to the matchup in a second, but the other move I wanted to talk about before we get into the rest of the injuries is Connor McDermott signs a 1-year extension. I'm not sure I understand why. He's been terrible, and it's not like he's some young developmental player. He's 28 years old. As I joked on Twitter, anytime you can extend a terrible player, you got to do it. I hope Joe Douglas knows something that I don't know, because I really don't understand why they did this.
I mean, I don't understand it either. Okay, but why? What? I don't understand the urgency of this at all. Is it just like, all right, just get a body now? Like, I don't know. I honestly don't have any explanation for this. Just, we just need to make sure we have at least one extra body. You can get that guy. I don't know what you've seen in Connor McDermott that you needed to lock him up for another year. Now, I'm not going to sit here and get too caught up in this, because it's not like, you know, they're giving him $20 million or anything. But I just don't see the point. I guess that's the word I was looking for. What happens here with Connor McDermott? What is Connor McDermott doing next year that you needed to get him locked up right now? I don't know. But again, it's cheap. It's not going to cost you a lot of money, and you can go back to never thinking about this again until one time in training camp next year you hear the name Connor McDermott again.
Well, hopefully you won't hear the name Connor McDermott in this game today, because if you do, that probably means that Mekhi Becton got hurt again. He is going to play in this game. So will Quinnen Williams. Sam Darnold is out. Blake Cashman is out. I don't know if he's ever going to be able to do much here, Chris. He just can't stay on the field. So there you go. That's your injury report, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's the report. And yeah, the Blake Cashman thing is... He had those injuries in college. This was another one of those Maccagnan specials, and he flashed a little bit that first training camp. We thought that they might have had something there in preseason. He was looking good, but he just can't stay healthy, and there's no reason to think that he'll be able to at this point.
Chris, quick predictions. I think that the Jets are going to have trouble being on the road here and going up against the Chargers. The one thing that you have to say, though, is the Chargers seem to find ways to blow these games on a weekly basis. So with that being the case, you can't put anything out of the realm of possibility. But you figure that Herbert should be able to pick on this weak secondary. And on the other end of things, Mekhi Becton is going to have his best test to date going up against a newly healthy Joey Bosa. You've got a pretty good pass rush there. You got to assume that Joe Flacco is going to be under duress all day. So I think the Chargers probably win this one by a touchdown. And I'm saying a touchdown because I have a feeling they're going to blow a lead and make it a little closer than it needs to be, because that seems to be the MO for them this year, is that they blow leads and end up losing. This time I think they'll blow a lead, or at least part of a lead, and end up winning a tighter game than it should have been. So I'll say the final score here ends up being 27-20.
We as a society, as a country, need to have a conversation about the Chargers. Because honestly, is there a team that would be more frustrating to be a fan of than the Chargers over the last like 15 or 20 years, really? Since remember that they had Ladainian Tomlinson and Phillip Rivers, and then LT got hurt, and Rivers had to play that playoff game on the torn ACL, and they were so good those years, and then those injuries popped up during the playoffs. They couldn't get past that, and ever since then, the Chargers have been like, you know, this team that can beat anybody and can score 40 points on almost any given day, but still find ways to lose all these games in miraculous ways, heartbreaking ways. And every single game, and for the past like 10, 15 years, feels like it comes down to the last possession. Phillip Rivers leading them back from down six with 12 seconds to go. And now Rivers is in Indianapolis, but it's still happening with Justin Herbert. And again, this offense looks really good with Justin Herbert. Herbert has been incredibly impressive, but the Chargers continue to be the most injury-riddled team in the league. Year after year, it happens with them. And I just, every time I put the game on, they're losing late or they're winning late and they're blowing a late lead. And I can completely understand any Jets fans being nervous about that right now. Only thing I'll say is I think this offense is going to be too good and too high powered that they will get a little bit of a break this week and have a rest and be able to build up enough of a lead over three quarters that they should be able to hold on in the fourth without sweating too much. But honestly, I can't think of another team in all of sports that would be more frustrating to be a fan of over these past 10 or 15 years, because the Chargers, every week they're it's close, and sometimes they win, but it seems like they lose way more often.
Really is frustrating. Although I would say it's been pretty frustrating to be a Jets fan for a while, but for a different reason.
Sure.
We got to hope that the Jets turn things around so it's a little less frustrating going forward. At least with the Chargers, they've got Justin Herbert to look forward to. And now Jets fans have to wonder what's around the corner for them as we jump into the mailbag here, Chris. First question comes in from Sean, Yankee Jet 75. He says, if Sean McVay is fired for some reason, do you make him a priority? There's no way Sean McVay is getting fired, and if he did, yeah, absolutely, you would go right after him. I think he's done a pretty good job with the Rams this year. There were some questions about the Rams the last year or two because everybody thought they should be headed back into Super Bowl contention. They went all in with the Jalen Ramsey move, and it didn't quite work out the way that they wanted it to early on. But right now, they're in contention for the playoffs and right there for the division as well, so I don't see Sean McVay going anywhere.
Yeah, so McVay is not getting fired, but if he was, yes, sign me up. Sign me up for McVay with Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields as his quarterback. And that's the thing that's holding McVay back right now. There's two things, in my opinion, and the number one is most important. That is Jared Goff. And then the only thing is if you hired McVay, if he became available and hired him, which, again, I agree with you, it's not going to happen. But there's got to be a little bit of impulse control from Joe Douglas, the GM. They've gone a little overboard on the whole loading up for one or two seasons and just not thinking beyond that. But give me Sean McVay and Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. Yeah, I'm going to be happy with that.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from Harry Skillman. He says, what are your thoughts on the Elf line pickup? Like most linemen that aren't stars or don't play on the Jets, I don't really know that much about him. Do you know if he's ready to roll after coming off of IR? So I talked about this earlier in the week. He's not good, but he's still young. He's cheap, and maybe you think you could get something out of him. Plus, he's better than Josh Andrews. So why not at that point? There's a reason why a bunch of good teams put in a claim on him and the Jets were awarded it, because they're first in the waiver order. These other teams wanted him because they felt he was good depth. That's kind of how I view Elflein. If you view him as anything more than that, then you're taking it too far. But for what he is, I think it was a good move.
Yeah, well, he was a relatively high draft pick, wasn't he?
Third round pick.
Okay, so I thought it was a second round pick. I remember talking about him leading up to the draft and a lot of attention about trying to get him for the Jets at that time when he was drafted. There was a lot to like on tape. I paid more attention to him, you know, at college when he was coming out than I have to watching how he played with Minnesota. But I know that there was a lot to like there. So that's why you're going to get teams lining up trying to claim him on waiver. It really doesn't matter if how you perform in the NFL to an extent. If you have that much coming from a program like Ohio State, have that much tape there, somebody's going to think that they can get more out of you, that they can get the most out of you. And I don't know if the Jets can. I haven't. Obviously, the Jets aren't the reclamation project for that for most teams. Maybe it would have been better for Elflein to go somewhere else, but the Jets had the top waiver spot. So it's absolutely worth a try. And, yeah, you got to imagine that he's better than Josh Andrews. But he does have talent and ability. He had it in college. I got to admit that – got to think that it's still there. So it's absolutely worth the shot there. And I do expect you'll see him. I don't know that you'll see him necessarily right away, though, but you're going to see him before the season is over and going to get a good look at him.
Next question comes in from our man, Peter J. Dillard. He says, gentlemen, any thoughts about Jets' priorities for the draft, including the middle rounds? Seems like there are a lot of openings at a variety of positions again. Also, what do you think of Anthony Lynn as a replacement, assuming the Jets want to keep their fans and get rid of the usurper? There it is for you, Chris. You knew it was coming.
Yes.
So let's start with the first part. I think the draft strategy is going to be that they're going to look to fill certain holes in the offseason and free agency. I think edge rusher is probably going to be top priority just because of who's likely to be available. If this report is true out of Pittsburgh that Bud Dupree is not going to get franchise tagged, it's very possible that he and Matthew Judon will be available on the open market. Fully expect Joe Douglas to go all in on one of those guys because then he won't be desperate heading into the draft and he can focus on the offensive side of the ball there. I think Joe Tooney also will be somebody that they go after, assuming that he shakes free from New England. And so then they'll head into the draft and they'll want to get some offensive linemen, but I think that they're going to be looking to get a shutdown corner and some firepower for whoever the quarterback ends up being. I think that's going to be the bulk of where the draft picks are spent. And then as far as Anthony Lynn, no, I don't want Anthony Lynn if he gets fired. As Chris just alluded to before, they lose a ton of maddeningly close games. Some of that has to come down to coaching. And you also don't want to be hiring a guy like that right after he gets fired. I think Anthony Lynn is a guy that if he gets fired has a chance to be a good head coach someday. If he goes back to being a coordinator or a position coach and then earns his way back, sort of like what you're seeing with Todd Bowles right now. But that's not a guy that I would hire right after being fired from the Chargers if that's what happens to him.
Yeah, so my obvious answer here is offense, 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 offense. I am going to continue to beat this drum. I'm all for go ahead and, you know, sign a Bud Dupree, Judon in free agency. Go ahead, do that. Position yourself so you can spend money in free agency if you want. You got to try to get a veteran receiver too on the offensive side of the ball. If somebody like Juju becomes available, but also, you can add some more pieces there, but go the edge rusher. You're going to have to, like we just said, Bud Dupree or Judon, but I'm really focused on just making sure that you get an offense, a good offense built around Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields to work with them going forward. I'm not worried about the defense at all at this point. Just build everything around that offense in the quarterback for the first year or two. Just focus on that. Again, you can spend some free agency money and you can do a pick or two, but the vast majority's got to go towards building this offense, in my opinion. And I'm a huge Anthony Lynn fan. But yeah, I would not be looking to sign him, to hire him right away after this. I agree with you. I would take a step back. But it's not even so much about not wanting to hire Lynn right after being fired, as much as there's just a list of coaches that I think would be a better fit than him, and I think would do better than he would. You could do a lot worse than Anthony Lynn. And there's a gap between Anthony Lynn, a big, huge chasm of a gap between Anthony Lynn and Adam Gase. So, you know, we always fall back to, you start mentioning people and somebody out there always, oh, he's better than Gase. Well, yeah, there's a ton of people that's better than Gase. Almost anybody would be better than Gase. There's a huge gulf, a giant chasm between Adam Gase and Anthony Lynn. So that would be a huge improvement. But I think you can do much better than Anthony Lynn too. And that's what I'd be trying to do.
Next question comes in from Joe Hornig. He says, what happens when Joe Douglas decides to keep Gase and Darnold and trades out of the number one overall pick? Does an XFL team get to replace the Jets at MetLife Stadium? That might be the scenario, actually. I'm starting to think about the XFL being a permanent fixture there, even after they folded up. I'll say this much. If that's what actually happened, I can't even imagine the reaction from Jets fans. I don't see that happening at all. Gase is not going to be here, barring them winning all the rest of their games. As far as Darnold, possible that he's here, depending on what happens the rest of the year. If he comes back from injury, looks really good, wins enough games to take them out of contention for a top pick for a quarterback, then maybe he sticks around. But if the Jets go 0-16, get the first pick, and they keep Gase and Darnold, that's going to be something that I can't imagine the fan base would tolerate. We've seen blimps and billboards and all that in the past. I would think that that would get cranked up to 11, as they said in the movie Spinal Tap, if that scenario were to play out. But I don't think there's any chance that it will.
See, this is like pulling me in every possible different direction here, because just something to know about me is at my heart, I like to, especially in sports, I like to root for anarchy and chaos. Just absolute disastrous messes that, like, I don't think it's going to happen, but I am hoping and praying that the Nets somehow get James Harden. And I want to see James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving playing together. I do not see this, envision this going well in any way, shape, or form. I imagine it being an absolute disaster. And I need to see it. I need to see it. I want to see it. I want to see everybody reactions to it. I always, in college football, towards the end of the season, I always root for chaos with the polls. I want there to be like six teams with a legitimate argument for those top four spots, so that everybody's always complaining and they're sitting there arguing, oh, but we beat that team by 7 points and you lost to them by 12. And then, but yeah, but we beat that team by 34 and you lost to them by 16. Like, I always want all of that. So part of me is sitting here being like, man, this, what a glorious mess it would be. And just watch everybody just be so angry and irate and flipping out, and all the comedy that's going to be coming flying out of everybody's mouths as they're complaining about the Jets. But yeah, this isn't going to happen. They're not keeping Adam Gase. I can absolutely envision a scenario where they don't move on from Sam Darnold right away. But that it's not going to be like they're going to go 0-16 and they're rolling into the season with Sam Darnold as their presumptive starter and not getting Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. But maybe they don't have an offer that they like right away. They want to wait and see if somebody has an injury in training camp, or maybe a new coaching staff can come and build him up a little bit to build up his trade value. There's a possibility that that could happen, but there's about a 0.0000001% chance that Joe Douglas doesn't take Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. And there's about a 0% chance that Adam Gase comes back. So I do not envision any of those situations happening. But again, part of me is very intrigued by this idea, because I love anarchy and chaos when it comes to sports.
Some men just want to watch the world burn, and one of those men is Chris Nimbley. Quick bonus question. This comes in from the Jet Ranger. He says, who would win in a gladiator-style battle between Mekhi Becton and 9,000 live chickens? The arena is roughly the size of three Outback steakhouses, and Mekhi Becton has no weapons or shield. I don't know where you came up with this theoretical, but that is awesome. I'm going to go with Mekhi Becton. I just don't think those 9,000 live chickens would stand a chance. And shield or no shield, the big ticket comes out of there on top.
9,000, so that's like an appetizer for Becton.
Right.
What's he going to have for the entree? What's the main course going to be? 9,000 chickens for an appetizer. Well, he's going to have like, 3,000 cows for the main course. This is a fun question. But yeah, I'm going to take Mekhi Becton, and, chickens, I don't think chickens are a pack animal like that. They're not going to work together like wolves, and they're going to peck at them. What's that going to do to Mekhi Becton? They can't climb up, pile each other up enough to get an attack. No, Mekhi Becton is going to eat his appetizer, and he's going to clean those 9,000 chickens up.
Before we go, let's try and put a few bucks in your pocket. Courtesy of my buddy Walter Cherepinski over at walterfootball.com. He's got your Sunday gambling picks. And if you want to get in on the action and place a wager, maybe two wagers, maybe three, maybe 10, I'm not judging, however many you want to place, head over to MyBookie right now and take advantage of the offer I'm about to describe to you by using the promo code OVERTIME. Use that promo code and you can get your first deposit matched all the way up to $1,000. So if you put in 200, you get 100 matched. All the way up to 1,000, which would be 500 that they would match you. It's basically free money if you're going to gamble on these games. You can bet on the full slate of college football games, the full slate of NFL games, boxing, MMA, whatever you want to bet on. It's all over at MyBookie. Just go and use the promo code OVERTIME. Make your sports viewing experience a profit session with MyBookie. Walter, let's make some people money this Sunday. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, Scott. So the Jets are back on the slate this week, and I won't surprise you at all. I'm going to bet against them once again. Not going big on them like I have in October. They're better now than they were back then because they have their receiving core back healthy and their offensive line's healthy too. But they're still missing some defensive personnel, including Brian Poole this week, which will be huge in trying to defend all the Chargers receivers. The Chargers are going to be healthier than they've been all year. They have their offensive line fully intact except for Mike Pouncey. They have Joey Bosa back from his concussion, so I think the Chargers will win this game by double digits. Small bet, though, on the Chargers. Elsewhere in the AFC East, I like the Dolphins -4 over the Broncos. Drew Lock has been terrible this year, and now he's dealing with a rib injury, so I don't expect them to be 100%. The Dolphins, I've been on them since Week 5. I think they're still probably the most underrated team in the NFL. I guess some people are catching on to them now, but they still should be favored by way more than 4. I think this line should be 7.5 or 8. I just think the Dolphins, with their great defense, special teams, and coaching, should be able to beat Denver easily. Also like the Eagles +2.5. They try to get +3 somewhere over the Browns, which might surprise a lot of people, but the Eagles are going to have their offensive line fully intact except for Brandon Brooks with Isaac Solomalo back from injury. And you have the Browns, who are going to be down their best offensive player in Odell Beckham, their best defensive player in Myles Garrett, and maybe their best offensive lineman in Wyatt Teller, who has a calf injury, so he may not be 100%. So I like the Eagles a lot. The sharps are on them, so I think they're a good buy low opportunity here. My best play of the week, though, is the Bengals +1.5 against the Redskins. The Bengals have also been dealing with a lot of injuries in the past. Remember against Tennessee, they were down their entire offensive line, even though they still won. All of them are going to be back this week, and also Geno Atkins will be back as well. They're missing some secondary players against the Steelers. They're going to be back, so I think the Bengals are going to be a lot better this week, and the Redskins, they're just dreadful. I mean, they lost to the Giants twice, and they were down big against the Lions before a comeback. This team's just not very good. I think the Bengals are a lot better than them, so I think they're going to win outright. Also, like the Cowboys +7. I think this is another good buy-low opportunity. Everyone's down on Dallas because they've had some ugly losses this year, but this is the healthiest they're going to be since Week 2. And remember, in Week 1, they almost beat the Rams. They're going to have Chidobe Awuzie back, their top cornerback, which will help against the Viking receivers. They're also going to have most of their offensive line back. I know the two tackles are still out, but their interior is going to be intact, and the Vikings are missing their top edge rushers anyway, so I don't think it matters. I think the big mismatch here, though, is Minnesota's secondary, which they have multiple cornerbacks injured versus Dallas's receivers. Dallas has great receivers, so I think Dallas should be able to win in that regard, and Andy Dalton will be back. I know Andy Dalton's not great or anything, but he's not terrible either. He's not Ben DiNucci bad, and so he's functional. I think he'll be able to move the chains. I think Dallas will keep this close, especially given that Minnesota is coming off a short week. Finally, I like the Chiefs -8 against the Raiders Sunday night. Andy Reid is 7-3 against the spread off a bye as head coach of the Chiefs. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes is going to be angry after losing to the Raiders earlier in the year, and the Raiders are going to be down multiple players. They're still down two offensive linemen and some other players on defense due to positive testing. So I think the Chiefs should win this one easily on Sunday night to get revenge. So those are the Walter Football.com Week 11 picks. Back to you, Scott.
Thanks, Walter, and thank you for listening. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.